House Committee on the Public Employee Retirement System. Open a work session on House Bill 3020. I think we have some amendments to this bill. Chair, did we distribute these?
Mr. McLaughlin?
The amendments.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, members should have several separate amendments in their files. I didn't distribute them again. Dash one amendments are from Salem Northwest Securities and the School Board Association, and there's dash twos from the university system.
Okay. Ken, do you want to come forward and talk about your business? Your amendments?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Armstrong, representing Seattle Northwest Securities. John Marshall is going to be here for the School Boards Association, but so far it doesn't look like he's coming to the room. We were before you briefly, about a month ago, to talk about the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3020. These were yet again another effort at trying to contain those expenses that could be taken out of the side accounts that are set up for the lump sum payments made on unfunded actuarial liabilities. What we have in the Dash 1s is being very explicit that the only expenses that can be taken out of those accounts are administrative expenses that are directly related to the administration of those accounts. And it further specifies in line 3, page 4 of the Dash 1s, that they cannot exceed $2,500 per year per account for the first 3 years. And then after that, it goes down to $1,000 per account annually. The reason for that is we wanted to give PERS the ability to charge adequate administrative expenses during the ramp-up of that whole process, and then after that period is done, an approximate three-year period, then it would go down to $1,000. PERS obviously is here in the room, and we've had discussions with them throughout the development of these amendments. We think that this gets us to where we wanted to be in a process that began during the 2001 session, which is to encourage employers to make their lump sum UALs via the bonding mechanism that the legislature approved, and then that it be fairly restricted as to what costs can then be taken out once those lump sum payments have been made. With that, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Ms. Keltner, if she has anything to add.
I'm Maria Keltner, representing the Association of Oregon Counties and League of Oregon Cities, just to let you know that we support the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3020. We have a number of members that have made lump sum payments or are thinking about making them. Some have bonded and some have used reserves. There are various ways that they have come up with the money to make the lump sum payments. Thank you.
You're welcome. Questions? Representative McPherson.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Mr. Armstrong, but where did the $2,500 and $1,000 figures come from? What is that fixed in relation to some expected level of expense related to the accounts?
Mr. Chair, Representative McPherson, frankly, that was those were figures that were originally pulled out of the air based generally on, in discussions with PERS, what we thought the actual costs would be relative to administering the accounts. We put that in sort of as a starting place. PERS initial thought, as I don't intend to speak for them, but just paraphrasing what had been told us at the time, was originally maybe those dollars weren't enough to get us there, and subsequent they had come back and said, no, I think that probably ends up covering what the expenses are. But it was a bit of an extrapolation for what the cost would be, and we thought that we would give them enough extra to cover that ramp up, but that when we got down to the $1,000 figure, that was going to adequately cover their administrative costs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
PERS, want to say anything about this? Jim, do you have anything to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Just by way of background, there are two types of contributions that we receive from employers, regular scheduled contributions and lump sum contributions, such as the one that was just referenced. But once they arrive at the fund, they're indistinguishable. For most intents and purposes, they're assets that are available to pay that employer's obligations to provide benefits. As we read dash 1 to 3020, it would exempt some contributions from carrying their share of the total cost of administering the system, except for the fixed charge that is mentioned in the bill for keeping the account per se. The implications of that are, one, as the previous witness said, the number has been worked out with PERS, and it does reflect our best judgment of what today's cost would be for keeping this separate account. But it does take these particular assets and exempt them from the burden of paying for their share of the other costs of running the system. Let me give you some examples. The costs of litigation, the cost of IT systems, the cost of general staff, the cost of customer service, etc. All other contributions that have been placed in have to carry that burden as well as the burden of their own record keeping. These would be treated given separate status, and they would only have to bear the cost of their record keeping. So the second implication is that some portion of these other costs of administering the system shift then to other participants, and those participants would be anybody that didn't make these type of contributions. Those could be other employers and members, including Tier 1, Tier 2, variable, etc. This is a policy matter. If this is the treatment that the legislature wants to accord to these particular types of assets, then that's a policy matter, but it is a change of direction in terms of the way the system has been funded to date. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative McPherson.
Mr. Voitko, I want to make sure that I correctly understand the situation. This proposed amendment addresses dollars that employers voluntarily put into the system in a sense to pre-fund amounts they would otherwise be putting in as contributions over time. Is that and they do it by issuing bonds and deriving proceeds from sale of bonds that are then put in a lump into the system. Is that correct?
Chair Canope, Representative McPherson, that's exactly right. They have a choice to either pay an amortized rate over 26 years or to, in essence, pay a lump sum and have the remainder of their obligations then refactored into a new rate for the amortization period.
All right, so follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up?
So that I suppose and a policy argument, and I'm not asking you to evaluate the policy because you've quite appropriately disclaimed responsibility for that, but a policy argument that could be made in favor of this proposal is that by having chosen to pre-fund, that they, the particular local government employer, should not then be subjecting that lump sum chunk of dollars, the proceeds of selling bonds, to the general administrative costs of the system, because they could have chosen not to do that. They could have chosen to just pay as they go over time with regular contributions and would not have incurred an administrative cost load on those dollars that are outside of the system. Would that be a correct statement?
Chair Canope, Representative McPherson, that is true. They could have paid on a regular schedule, then their assets would have been treated per the rules of all other assets in the system. And I think the argument, as I best understand it, is there's something very special and advantageous about encouraging lump sums that merits them being excluded from the costs of supporting the rest of the system's activities beyond just the record keeping for the money. Whether that's persuasive for you is for all of you to decide. I would say that the thought experiment might be, what if the entire $17 billion was paid that we have currently unfunded, that was paid by a lump sum? Then the remainder of our roughly at that point probably $30 billion worth of assets would then have to carry the cost of the system. So again, it's a question of whether or not you believe that it's such an advantageous thing to encourage that it merits shifting the cost of the rest of the system onto, in essence, other assets and other participants in the system. And I would point out, too, that some of those other employers and all of the members have no opportunity to make lump sums because they simply are not in the either in the financial capability to do so, or in the case of members, there's no opportunity or mechanism for them to make a lump sum.
Further follow-up, Mr. Chair?
You bet.
The figures that are proposed in the amendment are, within the scope of the PERS system, they strike me as absolutely nominal. the costs of the system are so beyond the scope of what we ordinarily deal with that seeing a cost of $2,500 initially and then $1,000 a year, and I read it that way, although I'm not entirely certain that the language supports that reading, that it's $2,500 during the first year, $25 a year, and then in the first 3 years. And I guess I'd like your confirmation from you that you read it the same way, and then $1,000 a year after that. So it would be $7,500 in the first 3 years, and followed by $1,000 a year. But then, and then the second part of my question is, even if we read it that way, which is as opposed to it being $2,500 for 3 years,
okay,
followed by $1,000 for all years, so it'd be just $3,500 total. Either way, it strikes me as a very nominal amount of money for what I assume is millions of dollars for when this kind of bonding opportunity is pursued. So I wanted to get your sense about the whether that's an appropriate magnitude of expense.
Well, Chair Canope, representing McPherson, in answer to your two-part question, first, I will confirm the numbers. Those are numbers that have been run by our staff. But keep in mind what those numbers represent. We were asked to answer the question, how much would it cost merely to record keep the accounts? And if you think to your own bank account, whether you have $1,000 in there or many hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I hope you all do, usually the fees associated with keeping the account per se don't necessarily change that much, the record keeping fees. And I want to compliment the authors of the bill for being so solicitous vis-a-vis my staff in terms of trying to work those numbers out and giving us an opportunity to say, yes, this is what it would cost to make an entry into our books for each of these accounts and maintain its accuracy and have it audited. What it does do is it takes those assets outside, it excludes them as a source of funds for also paying for all the other things, some of the examples I mentioned to you, IT, infrastructure, the building maintenance and customer service and calculation of benefits and so on, which would be a different treatment than we give the rest of the assets in the fund. Again, I'm not arguing against the policy. It may be one that you find advantageous.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Boycott, I'm trying to understand the need to assure that there is a fair burden if this bonding is to help lower an unfunded liability which wasn't supposed to exist in the first place. In other words, if there's no unfunded liability, which is what we used to have and we hope to someday have in the future, you're still going to have customer service, you're still going to have buildings and maintenance, and all of those figures and all those costs would be built into maintaining the PERS system on a financially sound basis. The fact that we're in an unfunded liability situation, I don't see how that really, as a policy matter, needs to be considered as far as will the unfunded liability payments carry their fair share of usual operating expenses when we're not supposed to have an unfunded liability to begin with.
Chair Canope, Representative Richardson, I I don't know exactly how to respond to the notion that we're not supposed to have an unfunded liability. I certainly wish we didn't have one, but the plain fact of the matter is that all pension funds that I'm aware of, and whether they're DC, DB, state, or private, tend to pay their administrative expenses by tithing, if you will, by a small fraction each dollar of assets that's held in the fund as a reflection of the total amount of services that one has to do to administer a fund, not just record keeping, but all of the other things. The fact that we might be short of assets from the administrator's point of view is an unfortunate circumstance, but I still need to tithe some assets to ensure the operation of the system. 3020 is an instruction that says you may tithe this type of asset only up to this fixed amount and for this purpose, and the other assets have to be tithed for the larger total cost of the system. And as I say, that's your prerogative to instruct me to do so.
Well, just actually a comment. What I'm really saying is that if all the employers had unlimited amounts of money and were assessed their share of the unfunded liability and could pay that tomorrow, and it all got paid up, PERS would still have maintenance, customer service, building, and all of the overhead staff and all of those things, and those would be built into the normal cost of running PERS. And so I understand what you're saying, but I'm just saying that I don't see necessarily a relationship between having to tie those into a debt that, when there's an attempt to try and make bulk payments or lump sum payments to lessen that debt, which is not normally part of the PERS system. It just happens to be a situation in which we find ourselves. That's my thought.
Jim, is there, you've talked a lot about some technical aspects, but is there a fiscal, do you think? The fiscal right now is minimal. Do you anticipate that changing if we add the Dash 1 amendments for you guys?
Chair Canope, I don't think that the fiscal would change that much because, again, I think we've worked closely with the sponsors of the amendment, and I think that these are the costs that would be entailed to do this record keeping and to charge it back. It really, the question on the table is really a policy one for you, and that is exempting these assets from the other obligations to meet the administrative costs of the system, and that's invisible to you, because what it does is it just simply causes us to tie the other assets a little more heavily to pay for litigation, IT systems, and so on. So there is no additional cost. It's a question of a shifting of the cost.
Any other questions? Did you have comments on the original bill, by the way?
My colleague, Mr. Delaney, Chair Canope, gave you some written testimony and spoke to the issue about aligning our statute with the intestate statutes that the legislature has passed, and I really have nothing to add to that.
Okay. Does PERS have a policy position on whether Ozzie Rowe should retire at the end of the session?
Absolutely not.
Okay,
just checking. We'll accept your guidance on that.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative McPherson.
Mr. Portgo, if you answered my question on this element, I didn't. It went right by me, so I want to go back to it. The language of in the Dash 1 amendment of Section 10 says that the board may charge a participating public employer expenses for administration account in an amount not to exceed $2,500 during the year in which the account is established and the immediately following two calendar years, and in an amount not to exceed $1,000 in all subsequent years. And the sort of interpretive issue I have is, does that mean that it's capped at $3,500 forever, or is it $7,500, that is $2,500 per year for the first 3 years, and then $1,000 per year thereafter?
Chair Canope, representing McPherson, I apologize. That is my reading, that it's 1,000 years or $1,000 in perpetuity in the out years. It's not a commitment that ceases at some point.
And $7,500 in total for the first 3 years.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify on the Dash 1s? Ken, did you have anything? Okay. All right. I don't know what the sense of the committee is on the Dash 1s. I think
think there were dash twos to this, but I don't think I wish to entertain those in this particular bill. I think we need more discussion about those. Any thoughts, committee? Want time to ponder? We don't have to do this today.
I have some initial thoughts, although I'm not sure that I'm decided in my own mind, Mr. Chair, but let me offer it up just to sort of get the ball rolling down the field here. It seems to me that the idea that employers would have a disincentive to bond to pre-fund their obligation under PERS by having to support the administrative costs of the system is probably undesirable. So the basic idea that they would be able to pre-fund and without having to pick up everything in the PERS system, especially given some language that's included in the version of House Bill 2003 that we moved out last week, which includes the potential that the consequences of ongoing litigation could be treated as an administrative expense, that I can understand the undesirability of creating that kind of disincentive. On the other hand, I'm uncomfortable with the $2,500 and $1,000 figures. It seems so low to me that it just strikes me that within a system this large and complex, that even if those are the way that the PERS agency would account for them now, that strikes me as capping it by statute seems undesirable. So I'm uncomfortable with the fixed dollar aspect of that proposed change.
Anyone else?
No comment.
Representative Richardson.
I agree with Representative McPherson that I don't see a benefit in making a disincentive for bonding that would make lump sum payments to the PERS plan and essentially promoting payment over a long period of time. I think that the cost, I can understand where the concern is, except that this is purely an accounting cost. Once the money's in there, it's just numbers on a sheet as far as what their unfunded liability would be if they paid 50%. Now the numbers are going to be 50% less, and so to me these numbers are probably, I think they're a little high if all we're doing is input and changing the numbers for this one member's account or this employer's account as to how much they owe. It's now less because there's no real administration that has to be done with that. It's just dealing with how much do you owe and how much have you paid. The real cost is in dealing with it on the employers in their office, because now they've got bonding they have to deal with, plus they still have amount that's still owed to PERS unless they paid it all off. But if this is purely an accounting cost to PERS and they're saying, well, it's going to be $2,500 for 3 years and $1,000 a year after that to merely keep track of the fact that you've made a preliminary lump sum payment, that's pretty expensive stuff in some ways if it's merely just to keep track of it. So I have no problem going forward with it, with the dash one or not. It's up to the chair, but I would support it if you wanted to proceed.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One comment as an additional sidebar comment to what Representative Richardson is commenting about, too, is that over a period of time, those accounts that are set on deposit, in effect, with PERS, will be diminished. So an amount which might be put in at $500,000 in year one, in year 22, might be $15,000. And to anticipate that you'd have a $1,000 administration fee on a $15,000 account, or down to $1,500, after a while, I agree with Representative Richardson, the amount is merely an accounting transaction against that account and shouldn't be that expensive, I wouldn't think.
Mr. Chair, I just point out that the language in the amendment is a not to exceed, not a fixed amount. It says actual administrative costs, not
right.
To exceed.
Right. But Mr. Chair, the concern has been expressed that could be very low, and I think in future years, when we extend it out, yes, $1,000 of today's dollars versus those dollars then, it might be very low, but the account balances would be diminishing as well.
Anyone else on this? I think what we'll do is hold this over until Thursday. Have some time to think about it and make sure that everybody gets their questions answered and is comfortable, but I don't anticipate any other amendments to the bill other than potentially the dash one, so take a careful look at those, and we can bring this back on Thursday. We may not have another bill also to work on Thursday. We're not going to take up 3314 today, so this will be a little lighter workload. My understanding is that 2003 will come to the floor on Thursday, so you all need to have your speeches prepared for Thursday, likely. The earliest it could come to the floor would be tomorrow with a rule suspension, but I think there might be some technical elements that we need to work out before moving forward on the floor. So, just so everybody understands that. We're going to close the work session on 3020, and if there's nothing else for the good of committee, we will adjourn. Thank you.